Shmuel Aleph, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph opens up. Vehi Esh Ish Echad, Mina Ramasayim Tzayfim Har Ephraim. There was a man from Ramasayim Tzayfim from Mount Ephraim. Shmuel Kano Ben Yerecham, Ben Elihu, Ben Teichu, Ben Suf Ephrasi. Brings down his own lineage, where he was from. Veloy Shtei Nashim Shem Achas Chana, Veshem Ashenis Pnino, Veilu Pnino Yilodim, Velchana En Yilodim. So Elkana was married to two wives. The commentators explain that really first he was married only to Chana. Chana was an extremely righteous person, but when she realized she didn't have any children, she told Elkanah, why don't you take another wife? And maybe, just like when Sarah, when Sarah had, she was married to Avram, she didn't have any children, she told Avram to marry Hagar. And she was hoping that when Avram would marry Hagar, she would have children, and that would cause Sarah to have children as well. We're going to see in a minute how exactly she was hoping that would work. And in fact, Elkanah took another wife, Peninnah, and Peninnah had children. We're going to see later on that she had 10 children. 10 children, and still Chana did not have any children whatsoever. And she was very disturbed by it, needless to say. Pasuk Gimel, V'olah, he'd go up three times a year to the Beis HaMikdash, to the temple. He would go to bring sacrifice and to bow down to Hashem. Over there, the two Kohanim, the two priests of Hashem, the sons of Eli, Chofni, and Pinchas, they were the priests at the time. They were the Kohanim. Now, the commentators explained that he would go up every single year in a different path. He would have a different route going up every single year. The reason for that was, he was hoping to get other people to go up with him. And so he made sure that he would go to all the possible towns on the way to come in with him and bring sacrifices to Hashem. Now, just to expand upon this for a minute, it's interesting to note that if a person murders by mistake, what does he need to do? He needs to run over to an Ir Miklat, to a city where all the people who murdered by mistake were. That's where they lived. And over there, they were safe. No relative of the person who was murdered, the victim, is allowed to reach them over there, and they're not allowed to kill them. On the way there, they're allowed to kill them. But once they reach there, they're not allowed to kill them. They'll be safe until the death of the Kohen Gadol, of the High Priest, and then they could come out and go back to their families. On their way to the Ir Miklat, every single junction they went to, there was clear signs told them exactly where to go. You want to go to the Ir Miklat? It's this way. You want to go to the Ir Miklat? It's that way. Every single junction they came to, they knew where to go. The simple reason is because they're on the run. They're murderers. They're running for their life. The relatives of the victim are chasing them. So they need very clear directions on how to get to the Ir Miklat, to the city where they're going to be safe. But the commentators explain there's a deeper reason as well. If, on their way to the Ir Miklat, they don't know the directions, they don't know how to get there, they're going to stop people. They're going to go into towns and say, can you please tell me the directions? How do I get to the Ir Miklat? Tell me how to get there. And people will obviously know this person is a murderer. Okay, maybe he murdered by mistake, but he's still a murderer. And to some degree, that will harm them. In what way? When a person views murder, he thinks of this evil, cruel, ruthless guy walking down the streets with two guns, one in each hand. And when they see that this is a normal guy, just like me and you, he doesn't have any spikes on his back, he doesn't have a tail or horns or anything, regular, normal guy, they're going to see, you know what, maybe murder is not that bad after all. Anyone could do it. You see, even this guy, who's a regular, normal guy, could also commit murder by mistake. And to some level, that will decrease the severity of murder in their eyes. That's why we make sure that he will not have to ask anyone on the way. He'll be able to go straight directly to the Ir Miklat, the city where he's going to be safe, to make sure he has no interactions with anybody, because it might harm those people. On the other hand, people would go up to the temple 3 times a year. There were no clear directions of how to get to Jerusalem. Why is that? For the same reason, just the opposite. We want those people, yes, to interact with the neighboring towns and ask them, can you tell us how to get to the Beis Hamikdash, how to get to Jerusalem? Please show us the way. And they'll engage in conversation. And they'll say, oh, you're going to the temple? Oh, okay. Oh, maybe we should go too. That's a good idea. And then I'll get other people to go as well. This is exactly what Elkanah was doing. He was going every single year. He was going through a different pathway to make sure that not only the people on his regular route would come and join him to the Beis Hamikdash, he would try to influence all the towns all around him to make sure they would also join him and come to daven to Hashem. Pasuk Dalet continues, Vayi Ayoim, Vayizbach Elkono, Venasim Lifnina Ishtoi, Vachol Benayu Venesel Monois. The day came, and he came to the Beis Hamikdash, and he gave Pnina, his wife, and to all her children, he gave each one a portion to eat. Ulchana eaten mana achas apayim. He would give Chana a double portion. He had a special love to Chana, and Chana was barren. She did not have any children. Pasuk Vav continues. V'chiasat sarasa gam kas b'avur harimo. Penina, the other wife of Elkanah, would have this thing going on where she would go ahead and she would tease Chana, so to speak, and say, oh, listen, oh, you don't have any children. I have 10 children. Look at me. Obviously, you're not that righteous. If you're really righteous, you would have children as well. And she would constantly tease her and make her feel bad. Kisagar Shambat Rachma, that she would make her feel bad that she was barren. Now, the commentators explain that Penina was not such a selfish and cruel person. She did this with good intentions. She wanted Chana to be jealous of her, and that would cause Chana to daven, to pray to Hashem, and hopefully that would cause Hashem to give her children. Now, two questions. First of all, Chana was an extremely righteous person. She was. She married Elkanah, which was a great scholar. It's hard to imagine a more motivated woman than Chana. She was obviously extremely motivated. This is something she wants more than anything. She wants to have children. You can see she's depressed, she's sad. And why in the world would Penina think that Chana's not motivated to have any children? Why do you have to cause her to get jealous? Oh, we're going to have this whole strategic plan. I'm going to cause her to get jealous, and then she's going to die. What do you need all that? She's clearly very motivated, and she wants desperately to have kids. That's one question. Second question is, it seems like not a proper thing to do. To cause Chana to go ahead and become jealous of her, it's not pure, not befitting to righteous people to behave that way, right? You're going to engage in such an activity of, I'm going to make her to be jealous, then I'll cause her to daven. What's that thing all about? Why don't you have a pure intention of, you know, just talk to her and tell her, you know, maybe you should daven harder. Why do you have to come to this jealousy to get her to daven? What's that all about? So the commentators explain the following. The Gemara tells us there are three areas that need chizuk, that need strengthening. Torah, learning Torah, tefillah, davening, and derech eretz, making a living. Now Torah, I understand. Torah, it's, you know, you have to make time in your day. It's not always easy to come and learn. Tefillah is also difficult. Your 5 senses deny the existence of Hashem, and you're, so to speak, talking to Hashem, who my senses deny. It's not so clear in my eyes that He exists, so you have to work on it. You have to appreciate the existence of Hashem and know that all your needs are dependent on Him. Okay, those two I understand. But making a living needs strengthening. Obviously, a person knows that if he wants to pay his bills, wants to pay his mortgage on time, he's got to go to work from 9 to 5, put in the hours, work hard, and that's how he makes a living. Why does that area need strengthening? That seems something very obvious to a person that he's got to work on. Why does that area need strengthening? So I'd like to share with you an observation. In the animal kingdom, all the animals are working from morning to night. There's no such thing as a lazy animal, right? There's no animal that says, yeah, whatever, I don't feel like getting up today. I'm just tired and I'm depressed. You don't have that. Bees work hard. All the animals in the kingdom, they do everything they need to do to get their food, to make a living, to feed their offspring. However, a person does have this nature to him where he's, at some point, he's not driven. He doesn't, even though he knows intellectually that if he doesn't work hard, he's not going to be able to pay his bills. He's not going to be able to support his family. But a person who's in nature lazy, he's not going to be able to get up in the morning. It'll be hard for him. It'll be difficult. And even though, if you're going to ask him, how are you going to pay your mortgage? How are you going to pay your bills? Oh, I don't know, whatever. We'll figure something out. That's the way people work. And even though sometimes people are all extremely very, very motivated, they know that this is the right thing to do. I've got to do this. I'm going to strive to that goal and do everything in my power to get there. But other times, people kind of lose sight of where they need to end up. And they're not motivated. There's a story of a woman who was a professional swimmer. An English swimmer. She swam the channel. Her name is Florence Katowice. And she set up to swim from Catarina Island all the way to California. Now, that's a long distance. It's 21 miles. It's at least an hour boat ride. But she trained for many, many months. She had a personal trainer who helped her. And she finally set the day where she was going to go ahead and swim that long swim. Happened to be that day was an extremely foggy day. And even though it was foggy, they couldn't change it. The day was already set. Everything was ready. And so she set out to swim from Catarina Island all the way to California. And she's swimming and swimming and swimming. 5 hours, 10 hours. After 15 hours of swimming, she turns to her trainer, who's right there next to her on the boat, and she says, listen, I can't do it anymore. Take me out. So he says, you can't stop now. You already swam for 15 hours. Just finish it. So she says, I can't. I'm telling you, I can't. Please take me out. He says, you don't understand. You're half a mile away from shore. Just swim for another half a mile and you're going to finish. She tells him, pull me out. He pulls her out. And she later explained, the reason why she couldn't do it was because she could not see the shore. Because it was so foggy, the final goal was not visible to her. She did not have the mental strength to complete the mission. And to prove it, 2 months later, she set out again. And this happened to be a bright sunny day. And she completed the whole thing. In fact, she broke the world record. And it was obvious that the first time she couldn't do it was because the goal wasn't clear and visible to her. Many times, people lose that vision of the final goal, of the destination where they're trying to get to. Even though they know intellectually that that's where they are, but they kind of lose the vision. They lose the goal of what they're trying to do. And it's very important for a person to engage in techniques to keep himself motivated. Look at the Olympic athletes. Olympic athletes will work for at least 4 hours a day. Vigorous, hard exercises. A typical gymnast will do his flips at least 20,000 times before he does it in the Olympics. We just had the marathon in Boston. A typical runner will run 160 miles per week at 10 miles an hour. That's astonishing. A swimmer will swim typically 240,000 laps. That's 250,000 laps. These people are extremely motivated. Everyone has their techniques, how to keep themselves motivated and focused. How am I going to get there? This is what I want to do. And a person really has to work and try and develop these techniques and get there. Now, that's exactly what Penina was trying to do with Hannah. She knew that I know, of course, I want children, I desperately want children, but it's important to engage, even in jealousy, even something that seems to be unholy and not the proper way of going about things. But that is a way that will keep you extremely motivated. Jealousy is an extremely powerful force. And that's what Penina was trying to get Chana engaged with. And that's why she was doing what she was doing. Many times when a person will go to his rabbi and says, listen, you know, I'm using yeshiva, I'm learning, but I'm not learning Lishna. I'm not learning for the sake of God because I want to learn Torah. I'm learning because I want to be considered this guy, everyone to look up to me, to be honorable. And his Rosh Yeshiva will tell him, okay, great, very good. He tells him, no, you don't understand. I'm not doing it because I want to learn Torah. I'm doing it because I want to look up to me, I want to get good grades. So his Rosh Yeshiva, his rabbi says, good, that's very, very good. The only person who wants you to learn Lishma, wants you to learn in order to know Torah, is not a person. He's the Satan, the Satan, the evil incarnation, the Yetzer Hara. Because he knows that if you learn Torah Lishma, if you learn Torah for the right reasons, so to speak, you're not going to get up in the morning. Because there is no driving force behind that. There is no driving force that's going to push you to get up and to work hard and put in the hours. And a person has to engage to find a power that will push him, even if it's jealousy, even if it's honor, whatever it is, to make sure that he focuses on the goal and he's going to work hard in order to get there. So even though it seems that Penina was doing the wrong thing, it's not such a nice thing to do, to cause another woman to become jealous, but she knew that getting her jealous will help her focus on the final goal and it will strengthen her will. And hopefully that will cause her to daven really, really deep and special davening. And hopefully Hashem will answer her and give her children. So let's see what happens. Pasuk Zion continues. V'chen yaseh shana b'shana, midei alois abaveis Hashem, kein tach'esam v'tifka v'loi toichal. Every single year, this whole episode would repeat itself. Penina would cause Chana to become jealous and get her upset, and she would refuse to eat. Pasuk Ches, V'yamar Elkanah Isha. Elkanah, her husband, tells her, Chana, lama tifki, why are you crying? V'lama lo toichli, why aren't you eating? V'lama yored levavich, why are you so upset? H'lo'enechi toiv lach ma'asar banim, I'm better to you than 10 children. The commentators explain that what he was really telling her is that I love you more than the 10 children of Penina. Even though Penina has 10 children, and of course they love them dearly, they're my kids, but I love you more than all of those 10 children. That's what he's telling her. Pasuk Tes, V'takam Chana acharei ochlo b'shilei. Chana got up after that year when she ate, v'acharei shalsei, and after she finished drinking, v'eli akun yeshev al kisei al mezuzas heichal Hashem. Eli was the kohen, he was a priest, he was sitting, he was in charge of at the time. And he was sitting inside the heichal, inside the sanctuary. Pasuk Yod, v'hi maras nefesh. She was very bitter, very, very depressed, upset. But tispala al Hashem uvachi tifke. She davened to Hashem, and she cried bitter tears. Pasuk Yod Aleph, v'tidur neder v'toymar. She made a vow, and she said, if you see the sorrow that I'm going through, and you remember me, you will not forget your maidservant, referring to herself, you will give your maidservant offspring. I will give him over to you, to Hashem, he will serve you all of his days, and in fact, he's also going to be a Nazir. He's never going to cut his hair. He's going to be worshipping Hashem his whole life. And she mentions the word Amasecha, maidservants, three times in her prayers, in her davening. Those three times are referring to the three mitzvahs that women are supposed to do, that are special for women. That is Nida, purity of the family, and Afrashas Challah, making challah and separating, giving a part to the Kohanim, and the lakas and lighting candles before Shabbos. She's referring to those three mitzvahs that are special for women, and she completed them fully. She did them the way one is supposed to do. Plus a good base. She kept on davening this whole time. She was praying. She was crying. And Eli is watching her this whole time. He's not really understanding what's going on. She's talking silently. She's whispering. Only her lips are moving. Her voice is not heard. Eli, who was the in charge priest at the time, he thought that she was drunk. She's not really praying in the right way, the way a person is supposed to pray. And he thought that she was intoxicated. Why did he think that? Those days, the Kohanim had a very unique way of communicating with Hashem. They had the Urim Batumim, they had the Choshen, the 12 tribes, the 12 stones of the tribes. And these 12 stones are very precious stones. In fact, in Parashas Tetzaveh, the Rabbeinu B'chaye goes through the quality and the power of every single precious stone. And every one of these stones has a power. People even use them today. For instance, Oidem, which is the stone of Reuven, the first tribe, is a red stone, and Rabbeinu B'chaye calls it ruby. He says it's a ruby stone. And it has the power, if you grind it up and put it into a woman's food, it has the power of getting a woman pregnant. And once a woman is pregnant, and she's afraid of having a miscarriage, if she always carries a ruby on her, like a necklace or a ring or a bracelet, then she will not miscarry. And when a woman is giving birth and she's in danger, the birth is not going well, if you put a ruby on her, she will be fine. That is, for instance, the power of Oidim, which is Reuven. Reuven, we see in the Torah how he brought red flowers to his mother, Leah. And Rachel was jealous of Leah. She wanted those flowers because she knew that those flowers, the color red, has the ability of helping a woman get pregnant. That's why she was so desperate for those flowers. That is the power of Reuven. We're not going to go through all 12 stones. If you want, we can someday go through the Rabbeinu B'chaye. It's very interesting. But to get back to the point, the Urim V'Tumim, these 12 stones had the names of the Shvatim, the 12 tribes engraved on those stones. And the priest, the Kohen, would go over to the Choshen, and he would pray to Hashem and ask him to send him a message. And the significant letters would light up. And so Eli saw the letters, Shin, Kaf, Resh, He. And he thought that those letters spell out Shikaira, someone who's drunk. But in fact, they spelled out something else. They spelled out Kshera, someone who's righteous, someone who's holy. And he did not understand the message properly. And therefore, he went over to Hana, and he thought she was drunk. She was intoxicated. What does he tell her? Eli turns to her and he says, Ad masay tishtakrin. Why are you drunk? It's time to become sober. Go to Alcoholics Anonymous and come back when you're sober. Matan Chana v'toymer. Chana turns to him and she says, Leah doini, it's not true. Isha kshasruach anoichi. I'm a very depressed and bitter woman. I did not drink any wine or alcohol. I'm just davening to Hashem from my heart. Don't mistake me for a bad person. Because I'm so bitter and I'm so distraught, that's what brought me to here. Vayan Eli v'yomer. Eli turns to her and he says, Lech l'shalom, go in peace. V'lei Yisrael itin shelosech shalshat me'imoy. And Hashem will answer your request and give you what you asked from him. Pasuk Yud-Ches. V'toymer tim 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 It's good that I found favor in your eyes. She goes back, and now she's happy. She's not distraught anymore. She feels that her prayers were answered. They got up in the morning. They bowed down to Hashem. And they went back to their home in the Ramah. Elkanah was intimate with his wife, and Hashem remembered, so to speak, he remembered the prayer that Chana prayed to him, and she got pregnant. She gave birth to a son, she called him Shmuel, because I got him from Hashem, because I, so to speak, Hashem answered what I asked for. Name Shmuel comes from the name asking, from the word asking. V'yal eish Elkanah v'chol beisai, the man Elkanah and his whole household, lizbech l'Hashem, es zevach hayomim ves nidrei. They go up as they usually do every year. They're obviously a different path this time, and they're coming to thank Hashem and to bow down as they usually do. V'chana li'osa, Chana did not go up this time. Ki amar le'isha, she told her husband, Adi gamel hanar, that vi yasiv. I want to wait until this young boy, until this young baby is old enough to come and go to be on his own. And I'm going to send him, v'niris p'nei Hashem v'yashav sham ad olam. I want to put him in the temple, and he will be there forever. I want him to be old to God. Pasuk Chav Gimel. Vayomer la Elkanah Isha. Her husband Elkanah tells her, Asi atoy b'naich, do what's best in your eyes. Shviat gam lecha isai. You could stay here until he grows up and he's old enough to be on his own. Ach yakam Hashem es tevarai. So you can fulfill what you promised to Hashem to give him and to be in the temple all of his days. Vatashav etesha Aisha v'tenek es b'na ad gam l'isai. And she stayed at home. She nursed him until he was old enough. And when he was finally of age, Pasuk Chavdal, V'ta'aleu ima kasher gamlosu, B'farim shleisha ve'if achas kemach v'nevel yayin, she finally brought him, and she brought a sacrifice of 3 cows, 1 eifa, which is a measurement of 3.4 eggs, kemach, of wheat, v'nevel yayin, and a bottle of wine, v'te've'yehu b'es Hashem shiloi v'anar nar. And the boy, she is finally grown up. They slaughter the sacrifice, the cow, and they bring him to Eli, who was the high priest, was the priest at the time. She tells Eli, you remember all those years ago when I was davening, I was praying, and you thought that I was drunk. Now, when you told me, it came true. You told me that Hashem will answer my prayers, answer my requests, and it finally became true, and here I am, handing over my son, Shmuel, to be yours. He's going to stay with you all of his days, and he's not going to leave. Elanar Zeis Palalti, this is the boy I davened for, I prayed for. Veitan Hashem li yeshelose shashalti me'imai. Hashem gave me what I asked from him. I am also, so to speak, lending him to Hashem, kol yomim, all the days. Asher hoya hu shol Hashem, v'shtachu shom Hashem. He's lended, he's, so to speak, borrowed to Hashem. They bow down to Hashem, and she handed him over to Eli. And from then on, he stayed in the hands of Eli, and Eli taught him everything he knew, as we're going to see later on.